In the article, you also mentioned that in Canada, steps have been taken towards global security, particularly in regards to terrorism. The Canadian Security Intelligence Service, under the former government, granted new powers under the anti-terrorism legislation. Bill C-51 expanded the Canadian Security Intelligence Service's traditional role of collecting, analyzing, and reporting intelligence to now taking action to foil security threats. Sukhpal, please discuss the impact of expanding the powers of the Canadian Security Intelligence Service.
So the impact of expanding the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, so CSIS, is seen as a huge step for Canada in terms of global security. So CSIS was created in the early 1980s, and the primary purpose of this agency, it was basically a civilian agency. Its purpose, traditional role, was in collecting, analyzing, and reporting intelligence. So with these new powers, such as taking action to foil security threats, it highlights a changing dynamic as to what CSIS is supposed to represent. And also, of course, there will be pros and cons. The RCMP basically were found to be in violation of civil rights and certain other misconduct, you can kind of say, that was going on. So that's why the civilian agency was created. So now that you're changing the civilian agency to take more of an actionable approach, changes what the whole dynamic is. And it leads to the possible, even for CSIS to now possibly do its own violations of charter rights that people have in its attempt to collect intelligence.
You also stated that adaptation and early prevention seem to be key requirements from countries in today's complex world in order to lead to long-term peace and prosperity, not only for every country, but also for the success of one's own. Please discuss the impact of this statement that you made.
The impact of the statement, I was trying to highlight the primary thing I wanted to really highlight here was that we're in such a complex and globalized world that we can't sit back anymore. When something happens across the world, we can't ignore it. We can't just stand by. When something happens across the world, there's an almost automatic ripple effect that kind of happens, and it can be indirect or direct. So if we give an example, the Ebola outbreak in 2014 that happened in West Africa, so in countries like Liberia, Sierra Leone, countries had to adapt almost immediately. So Canada itself had to do adaptation and early prevention to prevent the outbreak from even spreading to within Canada. So that is an example of what I meant here by adaptation and early prevention, that are required to protect one's own country, that you also need to help protect everybody else's, and this will also lead into or apply to when it comes to long-term peace and prosperity for one's country.
Another one of your articles, Valuing Canadian Female Soldiers in the Canadian Armed Forces, is one of the many articles that you wrote for the NATO Association of Canada. Would you be able to discuss briefly the severity of some of the issues addressed in your article?
So this article that I had written about, I kept hearing in the news a lot about the Canadian Armed Forces and how it was attracting a lot of negative attention towards, in particularly towards gender issues that was going on in the Canadian Armed Forces. So some of the issues that I addressed in this article was the underlying sexualized culture, sexual misconduct, harassment and assault, and female soldiers in the Canadian Armed Forces seem to be the main target of these unfortunate issues that were happening.
I know that in the article you mentioned that some action was taken in order to look after sexual misconduct that was experienced by some of the female soldiers. Do you think that moving forward this misconduct is taken seriously, and do you feel that more action should be taken in order to protect female soldiers serving in the Canadian Armed Forces?
Changes do need to be made towards the safety and well-being of women who are serving in the Canadian Armed Forces. And definitely, I think some of the recommendations that the justice who had written a report about some of the recommendations, such as establishing an independent body to receive the complaints of sexual misconduct and offering support for the victims, are definitely the right steps, I think, to take. as well as education and solidarity in having a zero tolerance policy for such behavior that is currently happening in the Canadian Armed Forces, and as well as a change in the atmosphere that can only come from within, and promoting positive experiences of women who currently serve in the Canadian Armed Forces. Because I don't tend to hear a lot about the female soldiers in the media whenever this sort of topic comes out about sexual misconduct. I don't get to hear the female soldier side, and I kind of would like to see that a bit more. And as well as promoting the positive, successful stories of women who have served in the Canadian Armed Forces.
And after reading your article, I felt that this topic is very crucial, and a lot of women who oftentimes do serve in the Army, those who experience sexual misconduct may fear the possibility of being reprimanded if they proceed by reporting what had happened to them. And I think that with some of these changes that are being implemented, I think what that will do is it will open the door to a lot of these soldiers who perhaps had a negative experience and then fear the possibility of being penalized as a result of coming forward with what had happened with them. So I think that as time progresses, what will happen is more females will voice their opinion, more females will state what has happened to them. And I think, as you mentioned, there should be a zero tolerance for any form of sexual misconduct, any kind of misconduct in any way, you know, especially when it comes to the safety and well-being of anyone. You certainly don't want to jeopardize someone's health or someone's well-being as a whole. So I think that moving forward with certain programs that are being implemented, I would hope that more females would have their rights respected, and that if any kind of sexual misconduct does happen, I'd really hope that no female is faced with the fear of what will happen to her next if she reports something negative that has happened to her. So I think that was an area that was of interest to me, because the media did spend a little bit of time reporting on the effects of these cases. However, only spending a few minutes on reporting certain incidences doesn't mean that the problem goes away. When the media stops reporting on what happened in the past, that doesn't mean that just because you don't hear about what previously happened, that is still not going on. And I think that's something that people oftentimes forget. So it's good for more people to be educated, and especially young professionals and those who are perhaps considering a profession in the Army. And if you're a female and you're considering a profession in the Army, I think you should pursue your goals and your dreams without having to fear the possibility of being sexually assaulted physically, mentally, emotionally, or in any way. So I think one of the main points I wanted to make is that women's rights should always be respected. And at the same time, if something has happened to you and you have served, you should not fear the possibility of losing your job as a result of reporting. And that's applicable to any job in Canada. We do have, you know, our rights, constitutional rights. And I think that at the same time, for the young professionals and the youth listening, I think it's important for people to understand that you need to do your research, you need to read. And I would suggest that to those who are interested in learning more about these issues, I would suggest that the listeners read Sukhpal's article. Again, it's called Valuing Canadian Female Soldiers in the Canadian Armed Forces, and it's under the Global Horizons program found on the NATO Association of Canada's site. Your article, Valuing, as I mentioned, Valuing Canadian Female Soldiers in the Canadian Armed Forces, mentions that the Canadian Forces Strategic Response Team on Sexual Misconduct was established in order to address major concerns pertaining to the misconduct of female soldiers. Do you think, you touched on this a bit, but do you think that overall the Canadian Forces Strategic Response Team is successful in addressing some of these major issues of concern?
So the Canadian Forces Strategic Response Team on Sexual Misconduct, I think to some degree, it is addressing some of these major issues that are happening and are ongoing in the Canadian Armed Forces. However, the sole purpose, if you go and you check out what this Canadian Forces Strategic Response Team on sexual misconduct is about. It's mandated to only lead short-term measures and actions that hopefully it's supposed to lead to long-term measures and actions to address these problems over time. I think it also is still a bit too early to see the impact this team is having in particular. However, recently the Canadian Armed Forces did open up the Sexual Misconduct Response Center. If you go on their website and you Google Sexual Misconduct Response Center, it just recently opened, and it's for members to report sexual behavior, and it also provides support. So this is definitely a step in the right direction that this team has been taking on towards addressing these major issues and concerns that are happening.
In another one of your articles, you mentioned that the United Nations Refugee Convention does not consider protection to refugees due to climate change as a reason for nations to grant asylum. This point is made in your article titled Climate Change and Refugees. Please discuss the impact of climate change on global populations.
So I mentioned a little bit about this earlier, about island nations who are right now experiencing climate change and the effects on their populations. In that particular article I had written about, I first heard about a man claiming asylum on the basis of climate change, I think about 4 or 5 years ago. And recently, just this year, they finally made the decision and they denied him and deported him out of New Zealand. So I think what this case is highlighting is that climate change is a very real thing and that it is impacting global populations. So if we currently look at the Paris Climate Change Climate Conference that is happening in 2015 currently right now, we saw the issue of island nations such as Kiribati and Tuvalu. Populations, these island nations are experiencing rising sea levels and temperature changes. And these are concerns that they had brought up during the conference. But the problem in that article, I guess, that I was trying to highlight is that there is a link between climate change and refugees, and we're going to see this increasing in the years to come.
What changes do you think should be further implemented in order to provide refugee status for those seeking protection?
Definitely a recognition of climate change and environmental factors as reason that country should grant someone asylum or refugee status. Currently, the United Nations doesn't recognize climate change and even environmental refugees who leave. So environmental refugees are refugees who leave their home due to natural disasters, while climate change refugees or climate refugees are leaving their homes due to maybe long term, such as rising sea levels. So these two terms are not really internationally recognized to provide refugee status for those seeking protection because there's a key point in the definition that United Nations says that what a refugee is, and it is that you need to prove that if you go back home, you're going to face persecution by your home country. So because climate refugees and environmental refugees don't have that key point there, that they're not going to be facing persecution should they go back home, a lot of nations will probably continue to deny people who are trying to seek refugee status based on these two reasons. However, we do see sort of some countries like Denmark, for example, in 2001, they had taken in 31 Afghans from Afghanistan during the drought that was happening. So some countries like Denmark are recognizing it as a sort of reason. However, I think more education and maybe a change in the way in providing refugee status for those seeking protection, that there needs to be that change and maybe an addition made to it regarding climate change and environmental factors.
Are there any final words you'd like to share with our listeners today?
I would like to thank everyone for listening to this podcast. If you have any questions or wish to contact me, feel free to email me. My email is sukhpal.sanga25@gmail.com, and you can find that email in any of my articles in the About the Author section. Feel free. I can answer any questions or even how to obtain a junior research fellowship. I would also like to thank you, Magdalena, and the Native Association of Canada for having me on today and featured as a guest on your podcast.
And Sukhpal, I wanted to thank you immensely for all of your contributions and I look forward to working more with you as time progresses. You've certainly been someone who has touched on every area, and your writing, I consider your writing to be golden. So thank you very much.